Welcome to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I thought we might take a slightly deeper dive into this whole push for artificial intelligence. It's an interesting thing that we can see sort of the past documentation for agendas that don't necessarily have the best interest of a high population in the world. And then we can see the blatant movements to reduce all that man survives on, using any excuse possible, getting rid of all the cows, getting rid of all the farms, burning down all the food processing plants. We know the environment's been super chaotic the second that there is a press release that it's a problem. You know, it's almost like the artificial, or I should say the synthesized construct of a story comes out. Hey, this is a bad thing. And then all of a sudden, all the storms and Mother Nature seems to comply with those stories. Isn't that a little weird? Nothing abnormal is going on in the world. In fact, you know, when my uncle went to optometry college in the 50s in Los Angeles, he said you couldn't see the top of any of the buildings. You could cut the air with the knife. It was awful. Now, how is it that when he was in that realm, and New York was the same way, and Chicago, and everything, every major city in the world with cars, when you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, figuratively speaking, the world seemed to be okay. Factories were puking out toxins. And I mean puking them out. Okay. How did we survive? Right? How did we survive all this? And how did we not have tremendous weather anomalies? Don't forget that. What does that have to do with artificial intelligence? Wasn't it interesting that in the decade that they have documented as their go time decade, right? There is no, how do I even put this? There's no way of denying that this is their decade where they're trying to accomplish a lot. I mean, Klaus Schwab, who heard of that guy before pretty much the 2020 medical emergency? Nobody. I mean, if you did, kudos to you, man. Soros, yeah, he's been around telling us, you know, the reason why we know Soros exists, unless you read Daniel Estulin's book, or even Crossing the Rubicon by Michael Rupert. He came out and said, you know, I'm going to start civil war in the United States of America in like 2010 or somewhere in there, you know. It was big news. Everybody in our camp started passing that dude's name around. We're like, who the hell is this guy? Now you can look up pictures and see him going back decades and decades and decades. But now they're telling you and showing you people like John Kerry. John Kerry and the devil are going to meet each other. You realize that? I mean, it's like he's going to meet who he's been drinking blood to. Let's just put it that way. And it's sort of an interesting thing when you think it all the way through. If you did depopulate, let's just say, a particular planet, and you get it down to a point where there are just maybe a million people, and you release the shackles, and you're like, oh my gosh, okay, let's get all the technology out, let's have some fun, the land returns back to its pristine state, all the cities are, you know, rusted away, or you deploy robots to clean it all up, then you put the robots away in Robot Mountain. And everything looks great. I mean, it really feels good. People are playing, you know, music on analog instruments again. And, you know, people are creative. And then you look at that world and you're like, okay, well, a bunch of evil stuff had to happen to make this beautiful moment happen. Is there any guilt for the moment that's potentially beautiful after that point? It's a complete mindfuck as to how you would process that. And I'm sure that the people that are doing it today have a vision of that. We know that, again, the people that pretend at the political level to care about all these different groups, we absolutely know they do not care about those groups because of their external behaviors. But why in the middle of this fast-paced, fast-tracked last 10 years of the way that we have been living on this planet, would they be dropping something like AI at a level that's going to get more and more crazy? a very close friend of mine who has worked on one of the most famous film franchises on planet Earth. I will keep his name mysterious because I don't have permission to say anything. But he called me up and he said, you know, what do you think about this AI, you know, art? And so we got into a pretty detailed conversation about sort of taking control as human beings over where this is going, because my answer in short to him, and then we'll move on, was that I said, look, a lot of times art communities in Hollywood have been victims of paradigm shifts. But the problem is that they sit around waiting to be victims, as if they have no power to control the press, to control the overall story and the overall opinion in the public eye of what these paradigm shifts mean. Now, when it went from like hand-drawn Lion King stuff to CG, Toy Story stuff, and then eventually photoreal everything, right? The audience was like, oh, wow, you guys are being able to, or you're able to tell stories you weren't able to tell before. That's not what's going to happen with AI-generated art, at least in the foreseeable decade, if we didn't get eliminated off the surface of this thing, right? What's going to happen is you're going to have these weird Best Buy animations that are coming out of AI, and you know the trained eye will absolutely see it automatically. I think the public will see it subconsciously. They'll feel it doesn't feel right. But they will eventually, 10, 20 years out, they'll get that AI to be just ubiquitous with reality. And then what's going to be funny is they're going to be so realistic, potentially, let's just say, that what was the point in the first place of watching a story that's just synthesized by a computer as opposed to actors, where you're looking for a person to have a skill set. I mean, imagine an actor who's really worked on their craft, and all of a sudden a computer comes in and just says, oh, we're going to steal your face. We're going to steal your body, everything about you. And then we're just going to act your voice. We're going to steal your voice. And essentially you would just get picked out of a crowd, almost like Kim Jong-un picking a girlfriend or a wife. He just looks out in a crowd like any rocker in history and says, oh, that's the one I want to sleep with or marry or whatever, have kids with. And then you just, like a Black Mirror episode, you're picked, you're scanned, and you might make some money, or maybe probably even make any money. You probably just get more privileges because that's the way the world will be. But what's going on right now, and this was shocking to me, this individual has a portfolio that I'm not sure I know a second person, and this isn't because he's been directly related with filmmaking as his dedicated profession for 30 years, just shy of 30 years, okay? His first movie he was ever on was just a name brand movie you all know. And then the second and the third and then the fourth, it doesn't get any higher than this guy. I'm just telling you, it doesn't get any higher as far as conceptual artist for a movie than this dude. You have seen his stuff big time. He just told me he came off of this very famous franchise, taking a bit of a break. And he said that he got hired by some film, and then he worked about 30 to 45 days, and they said, okay, we're done with you now. So he put together some general concepts, and the word on the street is that the franchise he was just working on is devolving down to a single individual for at least like several months. Is going to sit in front of an AI art generation interface, because there's several, right? I'm not sure which ones they're using. And this dude is going to just put it in, take it out, put it in, take it out. You know, just like, here, do this. Okay, change that. Give me four of those. Give me five of those. Make this blue, whatever. And of course, artificial intelligence artwork, AI artwork, is using all of the artwork in the world to synthesize together a new version of something else. And so the film studios understand this a little bit. And the thing that they're terrified, and they should be terrified of, is you can't prevent, without some additional programming, an artificial intelligence giving you an asset that is a copyrighted asset from someone else's library. A ray gun, a helmet, something very specific. It didn't change it 10%. Now, of course, this can be mitigated. Those can be changed. But man, you know, there's people that write songs where they actually try to steal someone else's song and get away with it. You know, Phil Collins stole 1999 from Prince and made Sue Studio, right? He got sued for it. And then there's just your buddy who writes music, and you write music, and sometimes you'll bump into other people's melodies and you don't even know it. There's only, like Prince said, there's only so many notes on a piano, man. Now, if you're clever, you can always get around it. Now we have software that can find melodies in other people's songs, and some are just so public domain, you're good. And so one of the things that these artists need to do is create a new pipeline for how artwork gets created for movies. This isn't going to be all about movies and artwork, but I'm just showing you, this is starting to have effect on people that you, I'm telling you, that you would assume after meeting them and looking at their portfolio, you would assume that these individuals would have absolutely zero problem finding work at the most in-depth level. There's no one higher than these people sometimes. And my buddy said, yeah, I just got clipped after about 45 days. And so he's going to go off and do a completely different thing within the industry, or I should say outside the industry, but within the art realm. He's going to teach, which at his age is really perfect. He can't really add any. This is how amazing his portfolio is. He can't add anything that will beat his current portfolio, even if he lives to be 150 years old, unless there's a giant paradigm shift, which is coming. And he can be a master of that. But he'd probably be in his 80s by the time that actually gets sufficiently capable of being used and inserted in a film. Okay. For me, it was a big deal that this dude, in 2023, June, has run into this problem. Of all the people in the freaking world, he would be one of the last, I mean, literally be one of the last people I'd ever put on a list of running out of ideas. I'd be running out of opportunities to present his ideas to studios, right? So, why the AI in 2023? Is it a serendipitous thing? Is it just happening now because, oops, it just happened? You know, it's just that's what it is. Is it a grassroots thing that the people came up with? Well, not really, right? One might contest that CERN providing the funding to create the HTTP protocol to launch the visual version of the internet in 1993, you know, it's about the time it all kind of got out there for everyone to edit a web page. One might say that was sort of organic, sort of like DOS, you know, that was invented by IBM and then polished by a bunch of people, then bought up by a company, then bought by Microsoft, and then they said that Bill Gates invented it. You know, it's like so fucking not Bill Gates. I don't think it's organic. And the reason why I don't think it's organic is because this is such a complex process, such a hardware requirement. How could you accidentally have a supercomputer that can do this? You know, I don't know if they're using NVIDIA cards to do the AI processing, but let's just say they did, and it's like 10,000 NVIDIA cards crunching, maybe 100,000, who knows, right? Maybe a million. Could that be an accident? I don't know. And then you might think, oh, well, it wasn't Microsoft until about 20, when the GPT engine was purchased, I believe in 2020. They put like $6 or $7 million into it, which today can't possibly touch the cost of this thing running. I am surprised that the press has focused any energy on saying it's bad. It's almost like this, it's a conflicting, there's a conflicting force in a lot of these agendas. And I'll give you a side example and then we'll come back to AI. Because I've said this before, I believe that they are blatantly moving in the direction of removing people, the total amount of people from this place we live and getting it down. Who knows how far that they really plan the docs, the PDFs from a particular website with a 2030 on it. They get it down by about 97%, if not more in some cases, depending on how you interpret it, right? The Georgia Guidestones were right there. 96.6 if they were at their maximum allocation. Okay. So why do they get people, get a welfare system put together such that the baby mama makes more money the more babies that she has? Isn't that a contradicting proof that they're not trying to depopulate, they're trying to increase the population? And I think you have to kind of step 90 degrees from the problem, and you have to say, it's to repress that person, it's to control that person, it's to create bodies that will most likely have to turn to crime in order to survive, because there weren't enough resources at home to give them a basic education. Even the homeschooling education, mom's completely overwhelmed. The more you go further and further into, you know, low-income housing, you get eaten alive by the environment. Prisons are private for profit. Where are you going to get those bodies? You make them. It's a business. It also galvanizes various pre-existing conditions where, you know, potentially a ghetto is full of a particular race of people due to previous centuries of repression. And so you just keep shackling them down, shackling them down. I watched an episode of Fresh Out the other day on YouTube. It's a channel dedicated to keeping, you know, the recidivist revolving door of prisons down. And they're trying to basically teach kids, hey, the gangster life ain't worth it. The second you lose and catch a case and go to jail, you immediately understand that you blew it. But this dude got 8 years for attempted murder. He shot a guy 3 times and the dude lived. Of course, he has no happiness in his heart that occurred. But he said he was getting transferred once into maximum security prison from some other prison. He'd already been in the system for a while. He said, when you get on those transfers, he says, you know, they shackle your ankles. They put this, essentially a loop of chain all the way around your body, goes around your waist, goes down your back. You get your hands with this piece of metal between them, and then you're shackled to the next dude next to you, and then you get on a bus with hard seats. He said this 200-pound dude, 200-pound-plus guy, fell asleep on him, leaning on him. This giant bus ride. And he just said, look, man, I think I've been set up. Because he kind of felt the black codes, the Jim Crow laws, when blacks were freed in America, the people that were in the Southern European Democrat realm, they knew that these people had no resources. And so they said, what we're going to do is create a bunch of black codes that if you're caught stealing, you're caught basically getting the strategic resources to continue living, we're going to put these people back in prison, and you get into a chain gang. And then you're going to work for the state or work for whoever will pay the state, and you'll be back on the plantation. It was a horrible circular loop issue. And so he was seeing the fact that he was born in a pretty much a broken home, weird neighborhoods, full of crime, full of drugs. Very intelligent dude. Very intelligent dude. In fact, this guy actually might have actually had a fairly decent family, if I remember right. I might be wrong about that. But just the pressures. Got to him, he got in it, boom. So here's the dynamic that comes back to artificial intelligence. Why complain about it in the press? Why have Elon Musk raised the alarm? Why have other people raised the alarm? Why not just let AI slowly do what it does? The jobs start disappearing. Press won't cover it. It just keeps getting better and better. Why not just continue, if you're the evil people, to just continue funding it and funding it and funding it? I don't know if you know this, but they're with ChatGPT. GPT is the engine. Chat is an interface to it. There's 3.5 version, and then if you pay $20 a month, you get the 4.0 version. Although they limit you 20 questions an hour in ChatGPT 4.0, because it takes so much processor power on the back end to answer your question, because it's really analyzing what you're doing, that it may or may not be worth that money depending on what you're looking for. I haven't seen any major difference. I pay that $20 to see what it's like. You said it's supposed to be faster in response, especially during off hours. I haven't found that to be the case. 3.5 is blazing fast. It says it's faster, but if you look at the ratings on the various interfaces, they'll show you like it says like two of it says the speed is really really low, so it's really strange. They're selling you they're upselling you speed, but then they tell you it's slow. It's like Blizzard Entertainment selling Diablo 4 to Mac users, and then the second you get done paying for it, they go, "Hey, this doesn't run on your computer." This is a new scandal that's going on right now because Microsoft, you know, is trying to buy Blizzard. I'm not sure if that deal ever went through, but must be going through. So they're cutting off the Mac and making excuses. But ChatGPT is limited to November 2021 on both 3.5 and 4.0. So in terms of what it knows about the universe, it got up to that point, and it doesn't know anything else except, here's what's interesting. When you talk to it, you have to log in. That gives you a user ID. And what that does is that creates essentially an AI bucket between you and the GPT engine. It does not share what it learns with you with anyone else. So if I were to teach it something that it didn't know, for instance, and it puts it in the bucket between the two of us, and you go in and you ask it about the same exact thing, currently it doesn't know, and you'd have to teach it again. It will not share what I have taught it. The nice thing about the bucketing idea is that you can have a conversation on a Monday and be deep into a contextual, questioning, question-answer session. Go a couple days, come back, and continue that conversation as if no time had passed. And generally, it'll pick right up right where it was, as long as you keep consistent with the way you're addressing it. If you get really chaotic with your communication style, you could always confuse it. But what's really interesting is there's more AIs out there than GPT. GPT is a Microsoft thing. Didn't start off a Microsoft thing, but it is now. Then you have Google has AIs. I mean, anything that's a piece of software doing something intelligent for you, like I said, that's considered artificial intelligence. But this stuff is, you know, neural net emulating humans Turing test AI, where this thing is attempting to be very human and then beyond. The interesting thing I never thought about experiencing in my lifetime, which is kind of silly, and I think it's just because I saw that the industry was really lagging and being lazy with it. Well, at least that's what I thought on the outside. When you grow up like I did and you get into computers in the early 80s, but you saw them in the 70s, and then you have these little programs that are trying to pass a Turing test. Turing was the gentleman that came up with a test that said if a computer can convince you that it's a human being because there's a wall between you and whatever is on the other side, could be a human on the other side, could be a computer on the other side, and you have a terminal where you can type. You can't see what you're typing. You could be typing to a human, you could be typing to a computer. But if the computer can convince you that it's a human, then it passes the Turing test. So there was a lot of gimmicky little scripts that came out of the late 70s even that were pretty damn remarkable. It would reiterate with you. Now, once you start seeing the pattern of iteration, you automatically sense, okay, this is a computer. It got a little bit better. Now, my uncle worked for Unisys, which you do a little bit of research in that organization. They are associated with three-letter organizations deeply. A lot of money in that. But I was talking to him probably in the late 80s, and he was telling me, he goes, look, this stuff's getting pretty good. And I said, well, how good is it, you know? And he told me, he said, well, actually, it's probably not late 80s. It'd be mid 80s because I left in 87. I've barely seen him since. It's a really tragic thing. Family issues. He said, you could paint a scenario where you're telling this computer, hey, there's a highway and there's a car coming this way at this number of miles per hour and a diesel coming the other way and another car is parked and it's trying to turn left. Will these cars have an accident? And he said that the software, even in the mid-80s, was like, probably. And probably is a really interesting thing because you have to analyze a bunch of analytics to figure out whether there's a probably going on. But what I'm now realizing more than ever, especially through the GPT interface, is that this is a very smart AI on the other side. Even if the factual information you're trying to drag out of it is incorrect, its form of communication, its use of the English language, at least, I don't know about your language, is obviously superior to 99.9% of all humans in the United States of America, where we actually are becoming, you know, incredibly stupid human beings. In terms of being able to sort out mechanical, be it software code or some other knowledge base, and explain it to us, it's interesting. I think once you talk to someone who has transitioned from being the student to a teacher, and they're actually good at it, because a lot of people think they're good at everything without being tested in any way, shape, or form. But the good teachers will tell you later in life, man, it's a big deal to switch from being a student to a teacher. It's huge. It's not easy. Because you have 30 kids in front of you on average, and you need to figure out one way to describe it such that the dumbest kid in the room gets it and the smartest kid in the room gets it. It's not easy. So GPT is sitting there nailing this, in my opinion, pretty much every time it communicates with you. And again, even if the factual data isn't correct, which is very rare in my books, in my experience, I should say, it's still doing a phenomenal job helping me understand what it's trying to claim is the truth. So it's been dropped in the decade of 2020 to 2030, excuse me. It's been put right in here, and it's right towards the beginning, to be honest with you. This whole thing was debuted and invested in by the Microsoft Corporation. Has that been a corporation that's really had sort of your connected to individuals that care about your health? Or, you know, it's like, is the press simply complaining about it to put up a front to make you feel like someone's going to defend you against this stuff? What would be the world if they didn't do anything? If they didn't do a single thing and they let this stuff roll, it would just quietly start wiping out jobs. The press doesn't have to say it's a bad thing. The press could say it was a good thing. Brag about it. It's good press, right? Think about, you know, if you, this is kind of a flavor of idiocracy, if you will. Imagine that the car somehow, there's no transportation like the car, but we got silicon chips, the video cameras all worked out. We just couldn't figure out combustion engine for some weird reason or anything, electrical engines. And it debuts in 2020. And the press takes on the car coming out in 2020. Transportation. Maybe we got trains. Probably don't have cars. Planes, excuse me, because we wouldn't have an engine to do that. We still need combustion for trains too. But this individual ability to go from house to house instead of straight on a linear line of a railroad track. And if the press tries to spin that as bad because it's putting horses out of commission, it's, I don't know, polluting the environment, it's whatever. Wouldn't we look back and go, what the hell was wrong with you, right? And we know that these things actually took place. There actually were concerns and complaints and people saying that things would be fads. I mean, every new innovation in the world, it's always claimed to be a fad. What's interesting about calling something a fad is typically it's measured where if the thing that they're talking about has a infinite benefit to man because it can scale over time to become more and more useful, like a personal computer, saying it's a fad shows your absolute ignorance, right? But if you could see something like, I don't know, something that's destroying humanity, something that has a more detrimental effect, it is just an addiction. Calling that a fad, well, you might not be too far off. But things like cocaine and heroin, I mean, think about it. That's definitely been a fad for quite a long time. Depending on how much you think, you know, tracking back to opium. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years of using these substances. We just do it to major extremes right now. What if somebody said they're debating this whole AI thing? And this is what I was trying to tell my buddy. I said, look, when artists, because I've seen, let me just back up here. I saw in the early 2000s when Disney laid off hundreds and hundreds of hand animators, and there was a big party at my buddy's house. And he leans over to him and he goes, these people all just got laid off from Disney because they were old school and they didn't catch up with 3D. And most of these dudes in the room are like late 50s or more because Disney's been around forever, right? And so my heart just sank for them because I knew they were probably working on the movies that are going to be revered forever for being hand animated. And here they are reduced down. My buddy told me that Disney animators consider the cycle of being knocked out of the studios a 7-year cycle, and that they'll actually go and wait on tables for 2 or 3 years waiting for the next big movie to come out that uses what they do. But when we're confronted with something, you know, I always say Kubler-Ross, it's such a handy way to think about everything, right? Anger, denial, negotiation, and acceptance. So we're in this phase right now where this is what typically happens with talented people. Because they're not, sometimes they're very mature, like my buddy, who's really looking at this from a big strategic play in his life. And then there's just sort of your immature artist who's living too close to the problem of emotions to be strategic with their life, right? The difference is this. When you're immature, you'll look at a challenge and you will deny it. You will say, screw that. This is never going to take over what I do for a living. Fight, 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 fight. And the people that are going to continue to be employed and be at the top of that employment and have the highest salaries and thus the more financial freedom. It's sad that the world's configured like this. I agree with you. Okay. Got to beat them at their own system and then you can create your own system, you know. They look at the challenge like this. AI art is the challenge. Okay. So you can sit around and say, well, I hope the Senate's going to pass a bill that limits AI art from a copyright standpoint, from just a jobs market collecting taxes from human beings. This notion that they care about you in any way, shape, or form to pass a law to help you. It's like the old famous question. Since you've been alive, what law has been passed that benefits your life? The answer is almost emphatically none. So one of the things I told my buddy is I said, look, why don't you look at it like this? Why don't you take that technology that's out there and fantasize about where you think it's going to be a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Tell me what it's going to be like to work at one of the most prestigious effects studios in Hollywood, or studios in general, because maybe you don't need effects studios anymore once they get the stuff put together. What are you going to be? You're going to be wearing an Apple Vision 1, Vision 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 17. You're going to be wearing some Oculus thing. Is it some implant? How do you do it? Do you have little gloves on? What's that world going to look like? What's the software going to look like? Is it all triggered like a holodeck? You know, computer. Arch, right? Is it going to do that? Probably yes. Hard light and projection inside of a room. Probably several hundred years away from that, but we'll see. But definitely virtually, we're there already. You could paint a painting in 3D in an Oculus headset or a Vive. And it's a funny thing because he told me, he goes, yeah, you know what, that movie right there? He goes, a guy sat in a warehouse with an Oculus on and basically built a whole set using our assets. And he goes, anyone could put the headset on and join him in the process, at least walk through it. Sometimes these folks have so much juice, meaning reputation, that they can actually go out and instigate companies to exist, to say, I have seen the future. I've seen the hardware and software that exists today. Here's what's missing. We have to hit this milestone. And then you go from being the artist that had created assets for movies, and suddenly you own the software company, hardware company, that is providing the tools for the next generation. We actually have this interesting thing as a side note here. You know that we have so much streaming services, so many streaming services out there that we don't have enough content to keep everyone happy. I see friends of mine, you know, surfing through Netflix, surfing through Hulu, whatever, and they're complaining that there's not enough content, as if creating a movie or a television show is just like pulling it out of your ass. And complaining that, oh, God, there's nothing to watch. It's these old, and like, Do you have any idea how many movies had to get made before a legendary movie got made that you just pissed on? You just took your pants down and pissed all over it like it was nothing? And, you know, just a little rant on the side here. It's funny. You'll take a movie, and I'm just going to pick one out of thin air. This is not, you know, my most passionate movie. But take a movie like Die Hard back from the day, like a real legendary first run, inventing a genre movie. It might take you 300 movies from a movie studio to get a Die Hard out the door. And these dudes will watch it 4 or 5 or 6 times in a row, or even 50 times over the course of 30 years since it's been out, 35 years since it's been out. And then they'll say the movie sucks, or they'll go up on IMDb and give it a 6 or give it a 5, only because they're protesting that another Die Hard hasn't been made. So they take a piss on a masterpiece because, whatever, it's just a really weird thing. I have been struggling for a few episodes here to say the right words to you guys to connect with you. And I still find it difficult because my friend just flat out called me and challenged me, what do you think about AI art? And I'm not talking to a guy down the street who's a plumber. I'm talking to a dude who is renowned for what he does. He's asking me an extremely important question. It's funny when things like YouTube come out. A bunch of folks have been sitting on videos for decades that they wanted to get out to the public, but they had no means of distributing it globally. So they put it up there, and then an alphabet agency, literally by that name, buys the company to shut them up. First, they tried to create their own video service, and it flopped. But look, think about how easy that interface was. Set up an account. Get your movie converted into one of the acceptable formats, MP4, MOVE, whatever, and then you upload it, and boom, the world can see it. Simple. Effective. But now you've got an artificial intelligence, several of them. There's going to be more and more of them. It will boil down to probably some duopoly. I think you're going to find that if you look at the Rollerball 1975 model where corporations did take over the world, what you're going to find is one corporation is going to have the best art engine for AI, and the other one's going to have the best scientific one, and et cetera, et cetera. One will be your marriage counselor, right? Your breeding counselor. But now you've got something that's a little bit tough for the average person to engage. If you know what you're doing, you can get in there and make it happen. If you're not a real good communicator because your English is poor or your native language is poor, I should say, then you won't know how to talk to it to get it to give you the response that you're looking for. You won't know how to set up in its memory the problem. I find that after about 3 hours of working with it, if I'm really stuck on a bad problem and I just can't just get through it, I'm trying to refine some code down to the smallest, you know, footprint. I get tired because it's not uncommon to have to ask a 3-sentence question to GPT in order for it to understand what you're saying. You've heard for a long time that there's going to be technologies that are going to separate society like oil and water. And what's really interesting about that analogy is that when you have like, you're maybe making spaghetti and you got the big pan that's got all the boiling water and you put a little bit of oil in there to kind of mix with the pasta to keep it from sticking to each other. It's just that little film of oil across the top. And the big giant 99% of it's water down below boiling, or it's going to be boiling soon. That's very similar to the ratio of human beings that I think can understand this stuff, sadly so. I don't want people to have those problems. But man, oh man, oh man, there's nothing you can do about saying, I have to describe an artificial intelligence interface to you, and you're still wondering, you're still bragging about the fact that you don't know how to configure your cell phone. You know, you're only a few years into knowing how to get the blinking digital kitchen clock to stop blinking. That kind of person would be light years away from remotely understanding what they're talking to, or being able to form a line of communication. It's almost an analogy. Here's an analogy that's going to be very graphic in one way to get you to feel the visceral nature of what's probably going to take place here. Imagine there's something going on where, I don't know, they spread some disease or something, right? And it's just an analogy. And 98% of the world catches it. And it's contagious. It truly was organic, whatever. Don't even worry about the fault model at this point. And so there's this group that's militarized, that's going to, you know, eliminate. There's every kind of weapon in the world to get rid of folks with this. It could be even that the solution is just to play a song on the radio and that just oscillates their brain just like Mars Attack and they pop. But you're not one of them. You're not one of them. For whatever reason, you're like Vincent Price and Last Man on Earth. You're Charlton Heston and the Omega Man. You're the legend, dude. And all you can do is sit and watch the death and destruction. It's not your fault, man. It's not your fault that you just happen to be winning the lottery with your genetics. In this particular case, it has, you know, maybe very little to do with your genetics and just your path in life. You just happen to be a geek enough to understand it. All those in the world with the pseudo-intellectual things, it's interesting. You know, we know we have to listen to a bunch of protesters that are the stupidest humans on planet Earth, all pretending to be academic geniuses. But if AI is sort of the Occam's razor, it proves who actually is intelligent and who is unintelligent. Imagine all the protests that would go away because they're unemployed. They can't beat the AI if they had 8 arms and 10 brains, as long as the brains were just as smart as the first one. But you're sitting there with one hand tied behind your back, typing with a couple fingers, and you're good. You're going to move forward. Instead of running away from AI and hating it in some Kubler-Ross loop of just denial, 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 you looked at the AI, you looked how it could threaten your life, and then you took advantage of the fact that you realize there's a bunch of investors out there that want to make a ton of money from AI. And you can always find, just like Jeff Goldblum in the movie The Fly, when asked, did you invent this machine? It's the remake, of course. Did you invent this machine? He said, no, I just know smart people. And I know what I need to get from point A to point B. So I just go to a guy and I get the piece of hardware that gets me from point A to point B all the way down the line till this machine existed. Well, you can Shark Tank up your own world. Look at how AI could help. If you're a plumber and it can't touch what you're doing, fine. Maybe it can figure out where the pipe should go. I doubt it because there's no accurate floor plans in the entire world. I'm convinced of this now. But you find some folks, well, you lay down some designs and you find some folks. Maybe you don't tell them everything. Maybe you don't tell them all the ingredients of Coca-Cola because that's what you're trying to make. Just like Jeff Goldblum's fictional character in The Fly. You just tell, what do you think about that? What do you think you get this? And you just kind of keep everybody confused. But in the end, you bring together the plan. Then you find an investor, an angel investor. You pull together some cash. You get this thing to push together, and you've got a new solution. It doesn't matter if there's someone doing remotely what you want to do. If you could think of a better way to do it, then that's what you have to do. I give you this example I gave many, many moons ago. When I was 23 years old, I decided to create this product for Fortune 1000 companies using this particular database software, which I was an expert at. What they were doing to us, that the problem was this, and this is just an analogy of don't ever surrender because there's competition, okay? They kept telling all these database programmers, these utter geeks, okay? Guys would come in with their hair looking like a porcupine, and then, you know, they didn't even know their hair existed, right? That's how out of touch these guys were. But they could write database software. But they told them, you have to make your interfaces look beautiful. You have to use all these 3D effects to keep, you know, like rectangles around things that are lifted, rectangles that are grouted to keep various fields and button groups all tidied up. All the buttons have to be a certain color, certain size. These icons have to be inside the print button. It should say print, then 10 pixels, and then the printer icon. all of your text labels and all your fields have to be coloned out, aligned to the left for that labels. Then again, all your fields are aligned to the left at the largest label. For those who write software, you understand everything I'm saying. But these guys couldn't do it. It would take probably 40% more time to get these guys to understand what the hell the problem was visually, because they're not visual people. So I wrote a piece of software I called GUI Designer. And all you had to do was someone who understands those standards that they want the corporation to have would tell my system, this is the way I want it all to work. Most of it's automated. Then they would upload their modules with hundreds of windows and push one button. All of that design data was out there on a cloud server internally, and all it would do is wake up and go through all those windows. I mean, it was literally in one button click, thousands of hours of work were getting done. I sold the product for 2 years, and the company that made the product had this idiot get in and remove the ability for me to figure out whether a color was lighter or darker than another color. There's no way to query that data anymore. Completely screwed it up. My product eventually just couldn't version up. But I had customers for like 5 years after that that wouldn't go to the new version. My product just kept running. When I told people I was going to make that piece of software, I got people telling me, oh, don't do that. There's already like 3 tools out there that do that, right? Some Mr. Wonderful trying to take a piss on my investment, right? Well, after my product came out, the competition ceased developing any further versions. Out of all of the competitors, there's only one out there, and it was super tiny, did almost nothing. I did this presentation in June of 96 to show a bunch of internet tools off that I had made, and I had people follow me out into the lobby shaking my arm off my body because they're like, you're the guy that created Google Designer, right? I'm like, whoa, I got a little fame from creating a product. And I was only like 24 years old, I think. No, but it would have been 26 by that time. Sorry. Made it when I was 23. Released it when I was 24, just a couple months in. But if I had listened to folks tell me it's a stupid idea because someone else is going to do it, all that education wouldn't have happened. I had to write the manual. The way this relates back to AI innovation is that you're not sitting there completely disabled. The amount of inventors that have never invented a single thing and then invent the most amazing thing is extremely high. It is over 50% by a mile. They just run into a problem. They loosen up their mind with the universe. The universe talks to them because the universe knows they can do it. And then kapow. They've come up with a machine that can chill wine down to 45 degrees in 30 seconds. They put a fishing pole on a beer can. You know, I mean, it's like, it's just, and then they sell like millions of dollars worth of this stuff. Maybe one of the objectives that a good person could do is to say, okay, AI right now, because it is being in, everyone's denying that it exists. And of the people that aren't denying it, they simply don't understand what the hell it is. But the AI is coming at them like the nothingness from, you know, Never Ending Story. They're just going to go, whoa, like, what is it? The Endgame Marvel movies, right? It's going to vanish. So maybe you take control of this and you go, well, what I'm going to do is look at an industry and see how AI is prepared to blow them out of the water. And then try to find a human contribution to the AI. If you have those expertise that will keep them employed, keep food on their table, I think that's important. We're not everyone's going to, you know, win. Not everyone's going to survive. They're going to have to pivot or figure out a way to survive. But now, what have we said several times, and this is sort of an extra thrust in your engine to figure this out. The movie World War Z with Brad Pitt and company, once it was analyzed by AJ, he said, you know, this shows you that you're going to be dependent on the military at some point if the world collapses, because it'll be the only way to survive. So imagine you're out of work because you didn't pivot, didn't self-educate. You denied AI's existence and didn't find your place within it. And by the time those places opened up where you might have fit, everyone else went first because you were going la, la, la with your fingers in your ears. Okay. Now you have to go on welfare. Now you get universal income. And I'm not really worried about your ego getting bashed. I think you'll survive that. But you got to get the medical regimens that they put down for you to take that money. When a really dangerous medical regimen comes across because of a synthesized threat out there in the world using press reality, you have to take something. Then you are eliminated, right? Your kids are eliminated. Your spouse is eliminated. And guess what happens to the problem of you? This state doesn't have a problem anymore because you're not on this grid anymore. Now, depends on how you view that. For me, what it also boils down to is that if they get good at what they do, then that's a scary thing. If they're like, hey man, we got this down pat, watch this. A, B, C, they're dead. D, E, F, they're dead. Two of them are dead, you know. It goes all the way down to X, Y, Z, and the world is dead. What's also important to consider is the notion of engaging in AI. Obviously has its potential threat, which is the more it learns about you personally, the more that they can predict you personally. Now, it could be that you do the math and you say, well, you know what? Most of the world's going to talk to this thing ad nauseum through TikTok accounts, Facebook accounts, social media in general. So they're going to figure me out because they're going to figure out people like me. That's true as long as you put your data input into the system constantly. You buy with credit cards. You do use social media. You send any emails that have pertinent information about who you are, big decisions that you make. You do a text fight with somebody or a text I love you session with somebody. And every one of those things that goes across tells an artificial intelligence through predictability. It's just mathematics. It doesn't really have any consciousness. But through mathematics, it figures out what you're likely to be like. And then it could predict you. The scene in Westworld that is unbelievable, and it seems sci-fi, but I'm telling you, in 10 years, especially if a quantum computer got involved with it, maybe, let's say 20 years. There's a scene in Westworld, the show on HBO, which is based on a movie called Gangster World, which is based on the original book in the 70s by Michael Crichton. These hosts, which we might call robots, start talking. And the people, the humans that are holding these sort of analytical paper-thin iPads can look down at the screen, and whatever the host is about to say, this iPad thing would have a tree of everything they're about to say next. And it would literally predict the next word 100% on the screen before they said it. And then, of course, as the hosts start to gain control of their own individual life and they get a hold of one of these iPads, they try to talk into it and they can see they're being completely predicted. I'm going to say obviously a cheat. That's what I want to say. By the end of this century, whoever's left on this world, as long as these systems keep going in the direction that they're going, human beings, organic human beings, will be able to look down at an iPad and see it predict everything that we were going to say. And that's scary, you know. And I'm not trying to freak you out. This is a brand new paradigm. I mean, this is a brand new extension of artificial intelligence. There are probably people in government that have had this for 40 years. And to them, they see the extension of how this is going to affect society, and they're probably involved in the deployment of it, if they're still alive. So they have the benefit of watching this and simulations of how it's going to either hinder society or benefit society. So we have a lot of catching up to do, as always. Remember, they organize, we don't, and that's the problem. I'm not sure how much we organize in our own minds, let alone sit down with another human being. I've been talking to a guy in his mid-30s recently, and he's pretty normal dude. Looks like a strong human being, right? You wouldn't, you take a look at him, you wouldn't think that he'd back down in a fight at all. But my God, when I start talking about the stuff that we talk about on this show, just the lightest treatment of anything that we have ever discussed in these episodes, he's very flattering and he's funny, but he is freaked out about this information. And it's strange because it's like looking at Andre the Giant going, man, oh man, don't tell me about the Santa Claus not being real. Don't tell me about that, you know? And you're like, whoa, you would predict that these individuals would have more personal strength, right? So anyway, I think you feel me on this one. It's a complex issue. It's very difficult to create thoughts and communicate these thoughts because this is like literally the frontier of the next phase of humanity. I mean, this is not just, oh, wow, we got a microwave and we create, you know, toxic water in 60 seconds. No, man, this is humongous. And the rate of acceleration on this is inconceivable. It's immediate. And a bar graph, it's a line going straight up, and it's going up at like ridiculous speeds at this point. So let's stop and talk about the show for a sec, because I've had a couple people say this. You guys are missing the video camera, me talking in front of the video camera. That is going to be coming back. Summer is almost consistently here at this point. A buddy of mine who has the other smoke lounge, which you've seen me do episodes in, he is actually buying a house. And as soon as he buys this house, it's going to free up that place for me to go in at any point in time and record. So that's going to free up some time for I can actually smoke a stick and talk to you guys. It's going to be fabulous. So we'll get back on track with that. I've been working on tons of stuff. So you're going to see the benefits of that in the opening of the show here real shortly. Hopefully before this episode comes out, you'll have a brand new remastered, re-rendered extra year and a half's worth of work on the intro. It's not just for the intro, but it's to make sure that that 2001 set looks bitchin' before I hang it up. So there's that. But if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything's up there. Again, we're remonetized on YouTube. They're still taking videos down off YouTube. Like they took out nationalism, which is really strange because I already had it marked as being removed, but I got another notice. They removed a strike and then they put another strike on that will be pulled off in September this year. So I asked them, could you not strike me? Just take down what you want to take down. Everything's on Rumble. Everything's on BitChute. Season 1 is on YouTube, but it's in its own category. I mean, it's in its own channel, excuse me. Just go to the website if you want to watch things on YouTube. You can get Season 1 over there. I had to remaster all of the episodes because they were just meandering around as I was figuring out how it works. But there's starting about 26 and 165 are my most popular episodes I ever made. They're moon episodes, and we will be getting back to the moon stuff. Just kind of saving it for some other things I'm working on. So to the Patreon and PayPal folks, thank you so much. Make it happen. Remember, you get the audio right when it gets mastered. If you join that, I'm also going to be putting some more exclusive content up there. But anyhow, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.